Hello, this is Chris with the Champaign News Gazette for Monday, December 23rd. We'll begin today's reading on the front page. In direct admissions, there's a seat for you. Program intrigues state lawmakers who see benefits like increased diversity keeping students in state. Each year, more than a quarter of Illinois high school graduates choose not to go to college. Of those who enroll at four-year institutions, almost half go out of state. And while enrollment is booming at the University of Illinois, some of the state's public universities have seen their numbers decline. What if every graduating senior had a guaranteed spot at one of the state's colleges or universities up front? That's what the state of Idaho decided to try when it adopted a direct admission system in 2015, automatically admitting all high school students to one of its eight public institutions. Since then, it has seen an 88% increase in college applications, a 6.7% increase in the state's college going rate, and a 3% drop in students heading out of state for college, according to U of I education professor Jennifer Delaney, who organized a recent conference on direct admissions at the I Hotel. Idaho, which has fewer students than the city of Chicago, is on a different scale from Illinois. But the idea of direct admissions is intriguing to Delaney and other educators who say it could be a low-cost way to boost college participation, especially for Black and Latino students and those in rural areas. Under direct admission, students are proactively admitted to college. Typically, all students get into open-access institutions such as community colleges or universities that admit at least 80% of applicants. Students who meet certain academic thresholds based on grade point averages and ACT/SAT scores get into more selective colleges. Students receive a letter indicating that they have been admitted to a set of colleges and explaining how to claim their spot using a common free application. For those who hadn't considered college at all, to get a letter that says you're college material, and by the way, we've got a seat for you, is life-changing. Traditional admissions systems rely on students having the knowledge and means to work their way through admissions applications and financial aid forms and find a school that fits their abilities. Colleges send admissions officers on recruiting visits, but they tend to go to feeder high schools, not low-income schools where no one has applied to that college for 10 years. This flips the script on that and says you're already qualified. You don't have to fill the form in every time for every school. We already have your data and you're already in. It's universal, so it levels the playing field. Students can still apply to other schools on their own, but you've already got a sure bet and you know there's a seat for you somewhere. Chuck Staben, President Emeritus of the University of Idaho, said the idea grew out of an experiment. He decided to apply to his university to see how it went, and it was awful. The application was terrible. He decided the university had to change its application, but also wondered why it was asking students to submit information that the state already had, such as high school transcripts and ACT/SAT scores. All the questions I was filling out are the ones the state board already has on every student at every public high school in Idaho. Why am I not just welcomed into higher education based on the credentials that I've generated? Byron Yankee, College and Career Advising Program Manager of the Idaho State Board of Education, said the state's enrollment had been static with a low-income and heavily rural population and a huge number of families where no one has attended college. Officials wanted to promote the big idea that there really is an option for every student in Idaho after high school. In Idaho, the expectation of most students is, "I'm not going to go to college." What we'd like to do is reset the expectation to, "I can go to college and I should go to college." There was little resistance from other universities, though Yankee said the quick implementation had officials scrambling to get information out to students and parents the first year. Since then, it's drawn huge support from families, communities, high schools, and universities. We initially brought in about the same number of students, but more Idaho students stayed in Idaho, Staben said, particularly those who live near the Utah border. The state also instituted a free college application for all state schools called Apply Idaho. The direct admissions program includes only public colleges and universities, but two private schools have since joined the Apply Idaho application and have seen significant enrollment increases. It's too early to say what the long-term impact might be in terms of graduation rates. Delaney, who was recently appointed to the Illinois Board of Higher Education, thinks direct admissions is feasible in Illinois, but we have got more challenges than they do in Idaho. The magnitude is different, but that's part of why it's so exciting to think about it. One issue is that Illinois' system for collecting longitudinal data about students isn't as robust as the one in Idaho. Idaho was in some ways a perfect test bed, with relatively few colleges and universities and the country's only unified K-20 Board of Education, kindergarten through graduate school. Illinois has two separate boards governing K-12 and higher education. In Idaho, every student gets into all community colleges plus two of the four-year institutions, and those who have roughly a 3.0 GPA or better are admitted to more selective schools as well. Any plan in Illinois would likely have to include more tiers of acceptance, given the wide range of universities and admission requirements. Another wrinkle, the U of I admits students into particular colleges, not to the campus as a whole, and some colleges are much more selective than others. Idaho's program admits students into universities generally, and students can then apply for specific programs. But Staben thinks some elements could work in Illinois. These aren't impossible things. This was inspiring to students. It was inspiring to our state board. It reminds us of our mission, and it costs almost nothing. While the U of I's highly rated Urbana campus already turns away thousands of students each year, direct admissions might be a way to increase diversity in the student body. People who didn't ever think they could go to the Urbana campus get a letter that says, hey, you're in. And that's amazing potential for changing people's lives. Direct admissions could be an enormous help to schools with falling enrollments such as Governor State, Chicago State, Western, and other regional universities. Illinois' high school population is declining, and it has a slightly below average progression to college compared to other states, which typically hurts a state's economy. State Senator Pat McGuire, chairman of the Senate Higher Education Committee, hopes the state looks into the idea. Imagine if you're a student on the east side of Joliet who's never heard of Eastern Illinois University, and you get a letter saying that if you apply, you will be accepted. That would have a powerful effect on a student. He also thinks it could help stem the exodus of Illinois college students to other states, a problem that McGuire and State Senator Chapin Rose have worked to address through the bipartisan Higher Education Working Group. Their efforts created the Aim High Merit-Based Scholarship Program and guaranteed renewal of Monetary Award Program grants. McGuire recalled a presentation by state universities last year about their biggest competitors in recruiting students. For the U of I, it was mostly other Big Ten schools. But for Northern, Governor State, and others, the biggest competition was nowhere, students who are accepted but never show up at any college. That was a bipartisan jaw-dropper. An estimated 5 to 10% of Illinois high school graduates qualify for college but never apply, either because no one in their family went to college or they get sticker shock. Rose introduced a bill in 2018 to give any high school student in the state with at least a 3.0 GPA automatic admission to one Illinois public university. But the State Board of Education balked, saying a provision requiring it to share high school student data with public universities could run afoul of privacy laws. Instead, a task force was created to study how to collect data on students' college and career interests. Rose supports the goals of direct admissions, whether it's the Idaho model or another version, including a common statewide application and more integration among public universities. This is about removing barriers to help students fill empty seats at Illinois universities and provide a better educated state workforce. Educators applauded a new Illinois law approved this year creating a four-year pilot program requiring four regional universities, Western, Eastern, Northern, and Southern Illinois, to automatically admit any applicant who graduates in the top 10% of their high school class and meets the university's ACT or SAT criteria and course requirements. The bill originally applied to all state schools, but was later amended to remove the U of I, Illinois State, Governor State, Northeastern Illinois, and Chicago State. The U of I had lobbied against the bill, arguing that top students from some high schools might not be prepared for the advanced curriculum at a top-tier research institution, and that the program could exclude high-achieving students outside the top 10%. Educators say direct admissions isn't a panacea. Simply telling students their college material isn't enough. They need support to get financial aid and overcome equity gaps, said Emily Goldman of the Partnership for College Completion. Increasing applications is good, but it's not the whole story. State funding for public higher education dropped by half in inflation-adjusted dollars from 2002 to 2018. Universities raised tuition in response, and state financial aid grants haven't kept pace, leading more students to take out loans or forego college. Goldman was part of a college affordability study that found Black, Latino, and rural students are being priced out of Illinois higher education. Black college enrollment is at crisis levels, declining by 11,000 from 2007 to 2017, despite little change in the African-American high school population. Latino enrollment has increased mostly at community colleges, but population growth is outpacing bachelor's degrees in that community by 40%. And many rural students can't afford a four-year degree or can't afford to return to their hometowns to work because of debt. Still, Idaho's experience suggests proactive outreach to students through direct admissions can improve college going among those populations. If you're in the lower quantile of income in the United States, there's only about a 10% chance you're going to graduate from college, and a pretty low chance that you'll go to college. Talent is pretty universally distributed across income, but opportunity is not. So if we can just do a little bit better job of encouraging people, the numbers will improve. We need to engage our entire workforce to keep the United States strong. And from Thomasboro, fire destroys camper home, resident unhurt. A smoke detector likely saved the life of a man whose camper home was destroyed by fire early Saturday. Thomasboro Fire Department Captain Brad Howell said a space heater caused the fire. The resident heard his smoke alarm sounding and escaped safely. He got up, turned on the space heater, and laid back down. I'm not sure how long he was laying, but when he got up to use the restroom, he heard the smoke detector going off. Firefighters were called at 8:20 a.m. to the Fountain Valley Mobile Home Park, just south of Rantoul on the east side of U.S. 45. Although the park is in the jurisdiction of Thomasboro firefighters, Rantoul crews got there first. When they got on scene, the entire thing was engulfed in flames, Howell said, of the 35-foot-long camper. About 20 firefighters from both departments worked about 80 minutes to put out the fire. The occupant was checked out by Pro Ambulance and declared fine. Firefighters kept the fast-moving fire from affecting other homes in the park. Howell said firefighters estimated the value of the camper between $40,000 and $70,000. And an article by Tom Kasich, taking a swing at old-time baseball. It's the most wonderful time of the year to talk about baseball. It doesn't matter that it's the second day of winter or a few days before Christmas. Mike Griffin is on a mission to find local folks, women included, eager to play an 1860s version of the national pastime next summer. The team would be called the Champaign-Urbana Twins, a nod to a minor league team that existed for a year long ago in Urbana, and would play its games on Saturdays. If it sounds easy, it isn't. Players don't wear gloves, helmets, masks, or anything else safety-related. They play in fields, pastures, and parks, even if they contain stones, holes, tall grass, no grass, trees, or barns. They abide by unusual rules that can change from place to place. And if they swear during a game, they're fined a week's pay, 25 cents. Griffin, a 52-year-old ballist from Camargo, hopes to organize a CU team that would start by playing five Saturday doubleheaders in the clover field behind Riggs Beer Company in Urbana and perhaps add more games during the summer. He's looking for men and women between age 40 to 60 because they're more likely to be able to meet the time commitment, who can agree to a schedule, include travel and costs, and a peaceful, friendly attitude. This is going to be more about history, reenacting it in theater, than winning games. It's a chance for people to dress up, learn about the early years of baseball, and have fun doing it. The 1800s game were played strictly in a gentlemanly manner, with teams congratulating each other on balls struck well, or a player who legged it on a close play after he struck a daisy cutter. He said he doesn't want hotheads. This is a non-competitive team. I will not tolerate any hotheads getting angry on the field, he wrote in a recruitment missive. We will play for peace, for love, forever. There won't be uniforms, at least initially, although players will be asked to wear old-fashioned clothing. When he began playing last summer, Griffin said he wore dark cotton pants, a long-sleeve linen shirt, a black pie cap, and black suspenders. Other teams dress in period uniforms or reproductions of the uniforms of the teams of yesteryear. Griffin said he'd like to recreate the Champaign-Urbana Twins uniform. In St. Louis, a vintage team is known as the Perfectos because that was the name of the St. Louis Cardinals in 1899, the year before they adopted their current name. Aside from games at Riggs, the Twins likely would play teams in Bloomington, Danville, Decatur, Springfield, Vandalia, Belleville, St. Louis, and French Lick, Indiana. You have to travel and you have to be committed to this. You can play as far away as Ohio. Last year when I played in St. Louis in the grassy field by the Gateway Arch, there was a team from Massachusetts that flew in to play in the tournament. Learning the rules and the language of the game of 160 years ago can be difficult. Although the bases are still 90 feet apart and there are nine players to a team, there are many differences from today's games. Outfielders are scouts and pitchers are hurlers. Deliver the ball to the striker underhand. Back in those days, the striker could actually ask the pitcher to throw the ball in a certain spot, or the pitcher would ask the striker, where would you like the ball? It wasn't about winning. Everyone just wanted to see the striker strike the ball and see how far he could get on the bases. There were a lot of guys who mastered the art of hitting the ball on the ground in fair territory, and it would roll into foul territory and into the crowd, and it would still be a live ball. Today, it's hard for some of these players to get away from the idea to hit the ball as far as they can. Umpires were called arbiters and didn't call balls and strikes, nor call runners safe or out, unless the runner and the fielder had a difference of opinion. If you're the runner and you know you're out, you just run off the field. You don't argue about it. Anyone interested in joining the Champaign-Urbana Twins should get in touch with Griffin at 217-372-4832. Finally, there's one compromise to Griffin's near-total commitment to 1860s baseball authenticity. His team will be open to all races. I can tell you, along with competitiveness, prejudice and discrimination will absolutely not be a part of my team. I am all for authenticity right up to that point. I will turn down no player based on anything except being too young. Bah humbug. Illini fans left wanting from St. Louis. David Jacob has watched the Bragg and Rights game on TV religiously every December. He changed his pre-holiday plans this season, though, and made the trip from Springfield to St. Louis to catch the game in person for the first time. His girlfriend goes to Ms. U, and I've been a lifelong Illinois fan. This is our one thing where we kind of clash size, but it's all in fun. One day out of the year, we're going to clash a little bit. every year I've watched it. As soon as I started dating her, I was like, let's go to this game. Jacob and his girlfriend Hannah Long, along with their friend Dustin Bracefield, bought tickets in what is normally the Missouri half of the Enterprise Center. A ticket snafu, though, got them a significant upgrade to the front row on the opposite side of the arena, just behind and to the left of the SEC Network broadcast crew of Mike Morgan and John Sundvold. We actually got these comped. These were an upgrade. Very nice and very lucky, I would say. A Merry Christmas to us, I guess. Jacob and his group wouldn't have been the only Illinois fans sitting in the Missouri half of the arena. While there was the occasional gold-clad Tigers fan with a seat in the Illini section, the pockets of orange were much more noticeable. So were the empty seats in the upper level of Missouri's half. The announced attendance for Saturday's game was 15,259. A rough estimate would give Illinois a 55-45 advantage in what's traditionally been closer to a 50-50 split. I'm pretty shocked with the Illinois turnout. Jacob ultimately left Enterprise Center disappointed. His girlfriend kept bragging rights for another year with Missouri's 63-56 victory. And even though they were outnumbered, Tigers fans chanted of MIZZOU drowned out the Illini fans in their ILLINI response as Missouri's pending victory became clear. Even with the loss, Jacob still has high hopes for his Illinois season, though. It's the first time in a long time I'm expecting to make the NCAA tournament. I like what Brad Underwood's doing. And from the local page, getting personal. After 35 years of service to his country and the city of Champaign, Dorval Norwood is ready to do something that won't be required. At 53, Champaign's deputy fire chief hung up his gear Friday, feeling the spark of urgency to retire while still healthy and young enough to enjoy the next chapter of his life. He shared a glimpse of his life and work with staff writer Mary Schenck. Where are you from? I was born in the city of Chicago. Tell us about your education. I started at Western Illinois University but got in the Air Force in 1985. I separated after 10 years. Didn't you meet a pretty fine woman by the name of Gloria there? She worked at the hospital at Chanute Air Force Base in Rantoul. I worked in security police, then I crossed into fire protection. We married in 1987. She ended up in optometry and stayed in that field, then went into personnel. She was in the Air Force for 22 years, and she is retired. Tell us about your family. I have three adult children, all grown and out of the house. One has gone on to being an attorney. Another is a psychologist, and another is in grad school, been deployed twice, and is now studying psychiatry. I have three analyzers, so Dad, what do you really think? Did you always want to be a firefighter? I knew I would be a public servant. I didn't know if it would be police or fire. The irony is, I'm sitting behind a desk. I took this deputy chief position 2 years ago. You started with the Champaign Fire Department in 1994. Do you remember your first call? It may not have been the first call, but I remember being on a medical call and I experienced my first fatality. I was still on probation and it hit me. I'm going to be up close to this for the rest of my career. In that same year, I actually rescued a kitten from the top of Holy Cross. It was at night and the owner said my cat will not come down off the top of Holy Cross. We did that. What's been your favorite part of the job? It's cliché, but interacting with people and feeling that your response to whatever their needs may be made a positive difference. They only call you because they were experiencing something they could not navigate or resolve for themselves. Least favorite part of the job? If you arrive and no matter your efforts, no services you can provide can make a difference other than an attempt to comfort. What do you like to do outside of work? Bicycling. I've been cycling for 10 years and I just ride for conditioning. How do you handle a stressful situation? Gym and cycling and family always seems to make it better. And finally, what are your retirement plans? Enjoy whatever is next. I have a grandson who will be 5 in March. I don't want to start another career. I'll probably do something, but it will be something that will not be required. It will be something I do because it's serving the community in some respect. Our home is in Dayton, Ohio, and that was our last military assignment. And from Orlando, Florida, Boeing's new capsule won't make it to space station. It all seemed to be going well for Boeing's astronaut capsule Starliner on its debut mission to the International Space Station Friday morning, until an unexpected issue derailed the flight and put it into question the future of a program already years behind schedule. Starliner won't make it to the station after all, Jim Bridenton said at a conference following the launch. An issue with the craft's timing system, which automates its maneuvers in space, meant it was running on the wrong time, causing it to miss a major milestone about 30 minutes after launch. The maneuver, called an orbit insertion burn, would have put Starliner on course to dock with the station Saturday. It didn't happen properly. And from Miami, U.S. cruise ships collide at dock. Two Carnival Cruise Line ships collided Friday at the port of Cozumel, Mexico, leaving one passenger injured. The Carnival Glory ship hit the Carnival Leg End ship and then narrowly missed colliding with Royal Caribbean Cruises' Oasis of the Seas ship. At the time, the Carnival Glory ship was maneuvering to dock at the port, and the Carnival Legend and Oasis of the Seas ships were docked. A letter to the editor, don't forget what really matters. This is the time of year when we busy ourselves trying to make everything perfect. The perfect gift, the perfect meal, the perfect outfit. We seek such things, hoping they will last forever, but we know the truth. In a short time, the toy we painstakingly searched for will go unused. The outfit will go back in the closet. Cards are tossed in the trash. Will it really matter in 6 months what we wore to a party? These holiday actions are, like most things in life, temporary. So during this time of shopping and wrapping, I invite readers to learn about the one person who really does matter this Christmas and every other day of the year, and that will last forever. William Shul Muhammad. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Champaign News Gazette for Monday, December 23rd. Please stay tuned.